Welcome to the Titan-Sized Podcast. I'm Luke Worsham, joined by the other two hosts of the Titan-Sized Podcast, Matthias Wadner, Will Lomas. We are back today to preview the Tennessee Titans' third preseason game against the Chicago Bears in Nashville. Before we get to that, we have a special guest joining the show this week. His name is Jim Coburn. You can find him out on Twitter, at Jimmetrics. He has a blog, draftcoburn.wordpress.com, and he has a YouTube channel called Common Man Football. This is a guy who absolutely immerses himself every year in the NFL draft. He writes a 1,700-page preview every year, and most of what he does deals with analytics. Will, I know that Jim is someone that you have a lot of respect for, especially his opinions and what he does in terms of his prep for the NFL draft.
Yeah, I mean, everybody hears metrics and analytics, and they think like 40 time, three cone, all that. He goes down into hand size, age percentile, market shares, all this detailed information that you just don't get anywhere else. He's one of the most important follows I have on Twitter.
I think market share is an interesting stat, especially because when you get into college football, you have these programs that are smaller, like a Western Michigan with a Corey Davis. And you get to see that, wow, Corey Davis had an incredible percentage of Western Michigan's offense, whereas if you go to a much bigger school like Alabama, a guy like O.J. Howard, though he's an athletic freak, he doesn't have as much of a percentage of their offensive production in general.
Yeah, I mean, it helps you kind of break down stuff. For example, Calvin Johnson only had 1,200 receiving yards his last year at Georgia Tech. I mean, if he played at Texas Tech or if he played in a spread offense, that would be nothing. But because he played at Georgia Tech, you know, that really shows you he's, you know, 80% of the offense, 60% of the offense, whatever it is, it's a high percentage of the market share, which is why it's such a great tool.
So we're going to go ahead and welcome Jim into the show right now. Jim, good evening. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. Excited, you know, because college football is coming up. This weekend, and also NFL football, of course, but yeah, I'm pretty excited.
Before we get into starting to talk about actual numbers, I want you to give all of our listeners a bit of an overview of what you do. We talked a second ago about what market share means, but just kind of give everybody an overview of the vocabulary you use and what it is you look at and what it is you do.
Sure. The basic way to explain analytics to anybody is all you essentially are doing is you're trying to take a trait, whether it's production traits or athleticism traits, and put a number to it, you know, from a 0 to 100 scale. If you're talking about market share data, you're talking about taking the concept of taking an individual statistic, so say yardage, say a wide receiver has 1,000 yards, and then dividing it by the team total yardage, which is like 4,000 yards, for example. And then you get 25% market share. But what you do is you take that number and you compare it to all the other wide receiver performances, and then, boom, you have essentially what analytics is. In many ways, it's just a way to, you know, to take the number, compare it, so there's some substance behind it. Because I think there's a lot of people who just throw out numbers like, oh, this quarterback had a 66% completion percentage, or they have this such and such, you know, yardage, but they don't actually get into what that means. You know, what does 66% mean relative to peers, and does it matter to be above average? Does it matter to be below average? You know, in a lot of ways, you're in analytics, you're trying to take a hypothesis. Like, say, well, I think cornerbacks who have very long arms typically do better, and then you test it. You know, you see, do long arm cornerbacks typically do better than shorter arm cornerbacks? And you basically, you know, do that over and over again. So it covers a lot of ground. I mean, there's so many different people who do analytics. You know, as you guys know, Justice Mosqueda with Force Players, that's a very specific type of analytics. You have all the market share sort of fantasy football guys who do that whole production side of things. And you have guys like me who just kind of do a little bit of everything, you know. So analytics in many ways is a term that can get kind of a little crazy because people think it just means one thing, but it covers a wide span of like tons of different topics, you know. Injury analytics, you know. could even be a topic, which I haven't seen too many people do injury analytics, but basically looking at, you know, how often a player gets injured and what are the chances of re-injury, stuff like that. I mean, everything can be analytics, but that's the basic sort of overviews. You're taking numbers and you're trying to test the hypothesis as to, you know, what matters in football, you know, and to try to figure out what traits should we be looking at, you know, from a numbers perspective.
So let's hop right into the numbers. And before we start talking about some Titans players, I have a couple of cornerbacks I want to ask about a little selfishly. We were talking a minute ago that I think, other than the two big dog edge rushers in the NFL, Von Miller and Khalil Mack, I think that cornerback Patrick Peterson is the best player in the NFL. And also another cornerback, Lions cornerback Darius Slay, I think is one of the most underrated players in the NFL just because of how well he plays and not many people understand who he is. Give us some numbers on those guys that relate to their success in the NFL, both of them coming from bigger programs.
Well, you know, to start with Patrick Peterson, just to, you know, get him out of the way. The basic way I explain him is he's in many ways kind of like the Calvin Johnson of cornerbacks. And I mean that just in terms of the fact that when it comes to his explosive or body strength score, which is a measure of his vertical and broad jump, you know, basically his lower body power, he had a 99.42 overall score when it comes to his lower body strength. He had a 99.91 speed score, which is basically speed for his size compared to his peers, and a 99.79 flexibility score, which is the short shuttle and the three cone measured against mass distance, and of course measured against all the other cornerbacks. So he's a 99-99-99 type of athlete, which is very rare. You normally don't find guys like that. And in terms of production, he also hit pretty much every sort of, you know, whether it was solo tackle mark share or pass deflection mark share, indicative of a high-quality NFL player. And, of course, at the NFL level, he's done very well, too. But, yeah, Patrick Peterson is definitely, you know, a stud player. He just is that type of guy that, athletically speaking, you know, you don't need to be this freak athlete to be an NFL player, but it helps. You know, it helps to have a guy that, especially with versatility. Now, just the versatility of a cornerback, where you have a guy who's that athletic, you can do anything with him. You could have him rush the passer. You could do pretty much anything you want. You could move him to safety even if you wanted to. Like, he can do anything from a physical standpoint, and I think that's a big advantage for him. And as far as Slay goes, he's another guy not quite as athletic as Patrick Peterson. I mean, the biggest difference was just that when it comes to his lower body strength, he had a 51.59 out of 100 compared to his peers, which obviously is different from a 99, but he did have a very good speed score. He had a 95.15 speed score, a 73.78 flexibility score, pretty much had the athleticism traits of a Pro Bowl cornerback. And so far in his actual NFL career, he's performed very well when it comes to just solo tackle market share, interception market share, pass deflection market share, you know, relative to his NFL team, you know, to the Detroit Lions. So he's definitely been another guy that, you know, not as freaky of an athlete as Patrick Peterson, but definitely has translated, you know, some of his college production to the NFL production and has been a pretty decent cornerback with that sort of transition, I guess, between those two areas.
We're going to hop into some Titans players now. We already kind of mentioned market share and how it relates to some receivers that come out of college, and the Titans have two receivers that just came out of college in Corey Davis and Tywan Taylor. They went to smaller schools, obviously, Tywan Taylor and Corey Davis. Corey Davis went to Western Michigan. Tywan Taylor went to Louisiana Tech, right? No, Western Kentucky. I'm sorry. Jeez. Anyway, I follow this website. I'm sure you know of it, playerprofiler.com. It tracks a lot of the same metrics that you track, like agility score, speed score, 40-yard dash, burst score, and they also do other things like college dominator ratings, which kind of is about market share. College YPR, yards per reception, and breakout age, because breakout age is a really good indicator of future success in the NFL. And I just want to get your thoughts on if you think those metrics do matter in terms of whether Davis and Taylor are going to be successful at the next level.
In terms of Davis and Taylor, you know, Davis in particular, he had a 92.12 passing yards, market share, production score, which you could think of that as a dominator rating. I mean, the dominator rating in many ways just adds age as another sort of factor in it, which, you know, age is definitely an indicator of a potential upside. I call it kind of the Mozart data point, in that it's the sort of idea that, you know, if you have a guy who's like 14 years old, or with the Mozart case, was like a little baby, like a little seven-year-old guy who can make all these symphonies. It's the same sort of concept that if you have a guy at a very young age who's dominating, you know, like dominating at a young age, not just being okay, but dominating at a young age, it can say a lot about, you know, what they can be, you know, how they develop. Because if you're so much higher than everybody else at a younger age, and you just continue to develop and continue to develop, I mean, that's basically the best concept. That, and it affects every position, you know. Every position, you see a real difference between the age, you know, how young a player is, how productive they were. If they're a dominant player at a very young age, it definitely translates from that kind of perspective. And with Taylor and Corey Davis, I mean, both those guys, you know, based on the data that I do, which goes back to the 1969 NFL draft class, both Taylor and Corey Davis hit the main sort of like the bottom end threshold for five-time All-Pro wide receiver candidates. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be five-time All-Pro. It's just that the majority, you know, the vast majority of five-time All-Pro wide receivers since 1969 hit into that level of competition. So it's just a good thing. You know, it's what you want. Like, you would hope for them to have that potential. And I think in both their cases, you know, Taylor from an athleticism standpoint, of course, because, you know, we got most of the, you know, he went to the combine, he did all the, you know, the drills for the most part. Davis is a little bit more, I've always been a little bit more cautious with him just because, you know, he didn't go to the combine, he didn't really do a pro day workout 100%. So I'm just a little bit more cautious with him. And again, I'm just being cautious because there's no data there. But both these guys, just from a production standpoint, you know, hit every single number that you want a wide receiver to hit. So there's a lot of, you know, potential that they could, at the very least, become a long-term starter, like a very high probability that both those guys could end up being long-term starters.
Going on to another Titan on the defensive side of the ball, I know you were a really big fan of Kalen Reed. You know, he's looked good this preseason. He's been a backup corner, and he's played some safety. I think he can come in and make a push for the fourth cornerback job, somebody who rotates in if somebody gets hurt or if they want to do something special with Logan Ryan and Dory Jackson going into the slot. Do you have any questions about him holding up as a number two corner if you have four guys on the field, on, you know, as a boundary guy? Or is he somebody that you think needs to play in a specific scheme?
I think he can be either or. I mean, when it comes to Kalen Reed, you know, just from a production standpoint, from college, you know, he was a guy who hit every single number in terms of solo tackle market share, had a 95.71 pass deflection market share, which just deals with his ability to, you know, make plays on the football when it's in the air. And then on top of that, when it comes to his athleticism, he actually had a 91.21 explosive lower body strength score, which just deals with how explosive his lower body is, you know, in terms of lower body mass. So the only sort of issues, I guess you could say, is that his speed score was only 68.95 out of 100, only had a 60.72 flexibility, which is still above average. It's just that most of the time, cornerbacks like this typically, like Patrick Robinson, you know, for example, he's a very similar type of cornerback with that athleticism kind of profile. But normally, this is a guy that would fit as a zone cornerback, can hold up as a bounder. I mean, he could pretty much do anything you want. I mean, a slot corner would definitely be something that, basically a slot defender kind of role would definitely be something he could excel at. The only issue is just, because of his speed and flexibility, if he goes up against like a super fast, super flexible type of guy like Antonio Brown or something like that, he's going to have issues with those guys. But if you're just talking about him as a, you know, as a guy, you know, basically going downhill and, you know, attacking the football in sort of a short area, kind of a zone kind of system for the most part, I think he could really excel in that sort of area, you know. And he did it on film as well. I mean, he was one of my favorite cornerbacks in that class just based on purely film, you know, and the athleticism stuff is just kind of like, on, you know, the icing on the cake for me, at least, you know, when it comes to him.
We talked in an episode we put out a couple weeks ago about how odd the nose tackle position has become through the draft, in that, one, it's kind of a crapshoot as to when you draft one of them high, whether or not they pan out. And two, it's very rare that one does get drafted in the first round, and very rare that good quality ones are found. I mean, when you think about the best nose tackles in the NFL, a name that comes to mind is Vince Wilfork, and he's not even in the league anymore. You have your guys like Dontari Poe, Damon Harrison, though, guys like that who are some of the best of the best. Talk a little bit about that position in general, and hit on, while you're talking about that, Austin Johnson, a guy who played nose tackle some at Penn State that the Titans took in the second round last year.
Well, when it comes to the nose tackle position, it's falling out of favor only because of the fact that the classic nose tackle type, you know, the 6'1", 6'2", 320-pound, you know, meat kind of, you know, giant guy like the Casey Hampton or the Vince Wilfork, like you said, those guys are just kind of disappearing in college football. You know, a lot of that has to do with the up-tempo. You know, offenses are going for that cardio, you know what I mean? So because of that, it's just hard for these guys to maintain, you know, 320 pounds, 330 pounds of mass when they're going up against these up-tempo offenses. You know, they just can't seem to catch up. You know, they can't eat enough food to maintain their mass, you know. But also on top of that, it's very much a position that I think, you know, a lot of people talk about production. They go, well, production doesn't matter. It knows tackle all this kind of stuff. But based on a lot of data that I've done, when I looked at all the sort of nose tackles, you know, from Helote Nata, Cortez Kennedy, Wilfork, Hampton, Kyle Williams, you know, just kind of underrated, you know, pretty much every single nose tackle, they may not have been very good in terms of sack market share or TFL market share, which is the main criticism that people have, is like, oh, they don't need a sack and they don't need to do this, which, yes, their responsibilities oftentimes is not to rush the passer, but, you know, to hold down. And, you know, to two gap and hold down and prevent the running lanes. However, all these guys, the really special nose tackle types, did really well when it came to solo tackle market share, which tells me, as just an evaluator, that, you know, despite the fact, and this is with everybody, Damon Harrison, all those guys, you know, they may not have been the crazy sack TFL artists, but they definitely contributed a high amount to solo tackle market share, which I think speaks a lot to that position, where production does matter at that position. It's just it only really matters with this one particular area of, you know, solo tackle mark. Basically, the ability, like, you're maintaining the fort, you're maintaining the line of scrimmage, but you're also, you know, basically disengaging when you need to make that play on that running back, you know, whenever that happens from sideline to sideline. In many ways, that's kind of the, like, that's the secret sauce of nose tackle position anyways, is solo tackle mark share, not so much sack and TFL. But to get to Austin Johnson, Austin Johnson is definitely someone that, you know, based on data, pretty much hit every single production metric that you're looking for a Pro Bowl potential defensive tackle, with the only issue being his overall athleticism data, and that he did not hit the minimum thresholds for All-Pro and Pro Bowl potential guys when it comes to his athleticism. In fact, he had a 25.94 explosive lower body strength score, a 21.09 speed score, and a 29.34 flexibility score, which the only score that really met the minimum threshold for like a Pro Bowl potential defensive tackle was the flexibility score. But he's just a below average athlete overall. But I do think that he has at least enough athleticism to become a long-term starter. I mean, most of his data profile fits sort of a starter at a defensive tackle or even a nose tackle position, and he was very productive. So, I mean, there is some potential there with him. It's just as far as, like, becoming a Vince Wilfork, right, or, you know, that all-pro type guy at the nose tackle position, that just isn't really in the cards of a guy like him, but he definitely could become a long-term starter.
One guy that gets overlooked in this, you know, Tennessee Titans offensive line rotation is Corey Levin, who they drafted late round this year. I know you're a big fan of him, and you thought he would be athletic and a great value at guard. They've been playing him some at center, and I imagine long-term they're going to want him to play backup at center and guard to keep him on this roster. But did they do a disservice to him putting him at center, or do you think he can play that just as well?
Yeah, for the most part, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a disservice because when I was looking at the Tennessee Titans, you know, when I did a breakdown on their offensive line on my, you know, my YouTube channel, Common Man Football, and I looked at most of the offensive line, you know, I noticed that they did have a lot of really good offensive line athletes already, you know, for the most part, you know, like Quentin Spain and all the other sort of guys that they have in that group. So I wouldn't say it's really a disservice to him. I mean, he is, you know, he's a tremendous athlete when it comes to speed and explosiveness and flexibility. And I think that he's the type of guy, body type-wise, that, you know, he can play multiple interior line positions. So I think that if he ends up being a starter for them at center or develop into, like, a solid backup guy for them at center, I don't really have any, you know, qualms with that. He's a guy who could pretty much, I mean, most of the time, interior offensive linemen athletes are very similar, you know, whether it's center or guard, they're very similar in terms of, it's just that typically centers are less athletic. I mean, that's the only real difference, is that centers typically are a little bit less athletic than guards on average. So if you put a super athletic guard at center, good things might happen. So I think that whether he stays a guard or moves to center, I still think that there's some positives there with him.
When the Titans took Adoree Jackson with the 18th overall pick, it kind of took some people by surprise. Some people wanted them to go with maybe a more traditional cornerback prospect like Tre'Davious White from LSU. But, I mean, Adoree Jackson obviously checks all the boxes from an athleticism standpoint. But he was kind of a polarizing prospect, cornerback prospect at least, because people aren't sure if he's going to be able to be a high-level cornerback because he's still learning the position at the next level. Do you think he has the potential to be like an Asante Samuel type of player or something close to him? Or do you think he's going to struggle to deal with bigger receivers and deal with and just work on his technique at the next level?
Right. I think with Adoree Jackson, I mean, yeah, from an athleticism standpoint, you know, pretty much everything was there. He wasn't like a Patrick Peterson athlete, but he definitely, you know, was above average in terms of, you know, every sort of thing. And the only sort of issue that really came up with him was just in terms of, you know, pass deflection mark share. He only had a 68.90 out of 100, which the majority of all pro types and Pro Bowl types are about 77.18 or higher when it comes to that particular metric. And then on top of that, you know, you just have the whole length stuff with him. You know, that it is true that 100% of all pro cornerbacks have 32-inch arm length or more, you know, in most cases. And with him, with a guy like him, he's more so in that lesser sort of range. But I still think that he can become a successful cornerback in the NFL. You know, you look at his athleticism, you look at his production, age especially, you know, he's a very young corner coming out as well, which a lot of times corners that are younger, you know, again with the whole prodigy sort of thing, a lot of times age, if a corner comes out young or any player comes out young who has a couple little production things here or there, they sometimes still translate pretty well to the NFL because of still that learning curve and stuff like that. And film-wise, I mean, he was a tremendous, I mean, the one thing I could say about Adoree Jackson is I think the biggest things that I really wanted to see him improve upon, or at least things I hope he does, is that I really didn't have any problem with him in terms of his awareness on the football field from a tackling standpoint or from an angle standpoint. You know, he always usually takes really proper angles. He's usually getting the football as fast as possible. It's just a awareness when the ball is in the air. That was the only sort of thing when I remember watching him, is that he was just a little young, you know, a little inexperienced when it came to those situations, you know, where he's trailing the wide receiver and he needs to, you know, make a play on the ball in the air. And he typically was a little inconsistent, you know, with that sort of ability. But if he can improve that area, you know, if he can improve his ability to have good awareness, you know, when the ball's in the air, to have good awareness of where that is and to make the play once that ball gets to that wide receiver's vicinity, then I think he could definitely be a very good starting cornerback, to even a Pro Bowl cornerback. I mean, that athleticism-wise, at the very least, I mean, that and arm length and everything else like that, he could still be a very good cornerback. I would just say that all-pro potential and, you know, stuff like a special Darrelle Revis-type guy, I don't, from a physical standpoint and what he brings to the table, he doesn't quite have all those traits.
Mm-hmm.
One last player we'll have you talk about before we let you go. In one of your recent YouTube videos on your channel, as we've mentioned, Common Man Football, you talked about some of the Titans' recent second-round draft picks. And when you talked about Derrick Henry, you mentioned that his athletic score is below the typical threshold for an All-Pro or Pro Bowl running back, and that the only running back in history to become All-Pro and have lower than that threshold is DeMarco Murray, one of Henry's teammates. Talk a little bit about DeMarco Murray and what traits of his, aside from his athleticism, which was average and led to him being a third-round draft pick, what traits led to him becoming an All-Pro running back?
Well, the biggest trait with him was his athleticism overall. You know, he had a 90.59 overall speed score. And in most of the data work I've done at the running back position, you want to have at least one athleticism trait that is above 79 or higher. And this is at every sort of position. Because, you know, there's tons of people who talk about running back, and they say, well, they need to have a good three count, or they need to have a good vertical, or they need to run fast. So they don't need to run fast. But based on all the data that from all the running backs, you know, since 1999 at the very least, you only really need to have one athleticism trait that is above average. And in Murray's case, you know, he had a 90.59 overall speed score on top of the rest of his athleticism data pretty much being above average, with the exception of that three cone. And again, he's the only guy where the three cone is important. Definitely, you know, if 95% of All-Pro and Pro Bowl running backs since 1999 hit at least a 7.09 or less, then yeah, you would hope your running back ends up in that majority area. But I think the biggest things that Derrick Henry has on his side is that he does have some similarities with Murray just in terms of having some really above-average athleticism traits. I mean, because, you know, he has extreme, really good explosiveness, really good speed for his size. It's just that flexibility is just a little off, you know, because he's such a huge guy. I mean, his flexibility is amazing, but oftentimes it really comes down to the functionality of it as well, you know, because there's a lot of people who, you know, talk about how functional that is. You know, like Ron Dane is definitely a back who ran really fast for his size, but then again, how many 250-plus pounds, you know, running backs you see running around nowadays? So I think that was the only sort of thing with Henry, but, you know, again, based on his production at the college level, I mean, the biggest thing is that he was a much more productive player in terms of, like, what Murray did in college was very much three-time Pro Bowl level, whereas Henry had more so All-Pro, you know, the God tier, I guess, of running back production, you know, when he was at Alabama. And then on top of that, Derrick Henry is also a much more athletic player than Murray as well, because Murray, you know, he had a very good explosion score, you know, a 63.68 explosion score. But Henry's more so like a 90-plus percentile explosiveness score, you know, and
wow,
90, you know, like he's just a better all-around athlete. So, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he's just a better all athlete because of his size. I mean, Derrick Henry's huge. I mean, you guys know this, you know, because you're fed. But, I mean, he's just such a unique – there's no other guy like him in the NFL right now. You can't – I mean, I'm just being honest. You know, like there's no other running back that's quite like a guy like him, and I think that's the best thing that – that he probably has going for him is that because there is anybody who's like him, that he could still end up possibly being a, you know, somewhat of an outlier, kind of like Murray was.
Jim, before you get out of here, please let our listeners know how they can connect with you on Twitter and YouTube and all of your other media platforms.
Sure. You know, you can follow me on Twitter at Jimmetrics, which is where I'm most active. So if, you know, if you ask a question or, you know, anything like that, you know, that'd be the best place to find me there. You can also follow me, you know, the Common Man YouTube, Common Man Football YouTube channel, where I do, you know, daily videos on the NFL and college football, you know, because college football is finally coming back. So I'm going to have a lot more videos about prospects, individual prospects, stuff like that coming up soon. And, of course, you can also go to my blog, too, where I mostly post most of my film grades at draftcoburn.wordpress.com. So if you guys, if anybody's really interested in just general scout grade, you know, what everybody tells me to watch the film, I do every year, guys. So that's where a lot of my work is when it comes to scouting grades and stuff like that, is on draftcoburn.wordpress.com if you guys want to, you know, check stuff out there as well. So,
Jim, it's been fun. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you joining the show.
Yeah, that was awesome. Thanks, Jim.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Before we hop into talking about the Bears and Titans preseason game this weekend, I want to ask you guys, what were some of your takeaways from the interview we just did with Jim? Something that I thought was really interesting was how highly Derrick Henry scored on the athleticism scale because of his explosiveness, mainly because that's not often something we've been able to see from Henry. He looked slow at times. But what were some of the things you guys took away?
That he really likes Adoree Jackson. It kind of just made me reassured, because when we drafted him, I guess I was a little skeptical just about what he'd be as a cornerback at the next level. Jim doesn't think that he's going to be one of those, like he said, he's not going to be one of those Darrell Revis guys, but I wasn't expecting that. But as long as Adoree Jackson could be a fringe, like a long-term starter and a fringe pro bowler on that level, then I'll be happy. And Jim seems to think he will be, based on his athleticism and some of his college production. So I was reassured by that.
Yeah, I really like to pay attention to the trenches. So I was listening real hard when we talked to him about Corey Levin. You know, I hope that he can sit behind the starting offensive line and develop for a year, but I really liked what he said about him playing center and good things may be happening when you take a really athletic guard and moving him inside, because Ben Jones is the glue on this team. He's great, and I'm not suggesting you replace him, but Josh Klein might not be the long-term answer. You know, people forget he was a waiver claim. He wasn't a big signing or a trade or anything like that. He was kind of an afterthought in that class when the Patriots cut him late. You know, I wonder if they're not looking for a replacement down the road. And if Ben Jones, who's played right guard, can move beside Jack Conklin and you can get a really athletic center, that could do great stuff for this offense.
So let's begin our preview of the Bears and Titans preseason game this weekend. Someone that will be joining the team for the first time this preseason is running back DeMarco Murray. He has been absent for the first two games against the Jets and the Panthers. What are some things that you guys look for or want to see from DeMarco Murray in his preseason debut?
Just as long as he doesn't get injured, I'll be happy, because hamstring injuries have a tendency to just be brutal and just linger for hours, days on end, weeks on end. And especially for a running back like DeMarco, who's kind of a bigger guy, and he relies on his legs, obviously, very much so. I just want to see him come away healthy from this one. I really don't care if he rushes for five times or 5 yards. I don't care. He's going to be fine once the season comes, but in order for him to be fine when the season comes, he needs to be healthy. And that's all I want to see from DeMarco.
Yeah, I mean, his health is the most important thing. I would say, you know, Derrick Henry does a great job going off tackle. That's where he scored both of his touchdowns this past week. You know, you think of him as a pound the rock, go inside, pound the A-gap kind of thing. Oh, no. Let me switch. Okay, where am I at now?
Good.
Okay, let me jump back in. I was talking about what I want to see from DeMarco Murray. This is always the worst part, because I always like lose my train of thought quick. All right. Yeah, health is the most important thing you want to see this weekend, but I really want to see how he does inside the tackle box. You know, Derrick Henry scored both of his touchdowns off tackle. He does a great job cutting it outside and bouncing runs that are clogged in the middle, but I want to see somebody go behind the center, behind the guard, and make 3 or 4 yards at a time. You know, and I'd also like to see him catching passes, you know, in the flats. Derrick Henry did some of that, but he kind of left me underwhelmed. He would stand up and look for a big cutback that was never there. I want to see DeMarco Murray catch the ball and turn so that we can see why DeMarco Murray's a starting running back, because if there's not that big of a difference, you know, I'm leaning towards starting Derrick Henry.
And that's a hot take.
Yeah, I was just going to keep the show going along, and then I realized that we just had a huge hot take.
Well, okay. Let me unfold it a little bit. It's not that I think he should start now, but if you're going to start the season with an injured DeMarco Murray or DeMarco Murray who's less than 100% because he hadn't practiced and all that, if he comes in and can't do something, you know, significantly better than Derrick Henry, why don't you split touches? I mean, why don't you start off the bat, have a 1A, 1B system where Derrick Henry starts and pounds the ball and really makes linebackers make business decisions, and then you have DeMarco Murray who can come in and be more versatile and be more flexible, but who can also run inside, he's shown that in the past. He's had long runs up the middle before. So, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, this is my stance that we should start Derrick Henry tomorrow, but if DeMarco Murray is not markedly better, there's no reason not to start the younger, cheaper guy just from a long-term franchise-building standpoint.
I would still give if DeMarco is fully healthy by the start of the season or throughout the whole season, I'm giving DeMarco this one last season before he turns 30, and then I'm turning over the keys to Derrick Henry. But, I mean, DeMarco's still a baller as long as he's fully healthy.
I get that. I'm not arguing that now. Like I said, my only caveat is if everything's equal, start the young guy. That's the way I always lean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel you.
In week one of the preseason against the New York Jets, the Titans faced a very good interior defensive line in Sheldon Richardson, Muhammad Wilkerson, and Leonard Williams. Against the Panthers last week, the Titans faced really good linebackers in Shaq Thompson, Luke Kuechly, and Thomas Davis. This week, we go to a new position of strength for the Chicago Bears, and that is their edge pass rushers with Leonard Floyd and Pernell McPhee. This week, instead of really the guards and the center, Ben Jones, being tested, Jack Conklin and Taylor Lewan are going to face a really big test in this Bears defense.
I'm not sure if McPhee is going to play. I think he's recovering from like a knee injury, but the Bears have a really underrated front seven. They have a lot of talent on their defensive line, and also, like you said, at 3-4 outside linebacker and Floyd. Floyd is looking really good. A lot of people kind of panned that pick when it happened because he was a top 10 pick, but it's looking like that was a really good pick. They also have Lamar Houston, who is really good in Oakland. I'm not sure he's done much with Chicago yet, but I mean, he's still talented. And they have guys along the defensive line that just they can plug holes in there and allow their 3-4 linebackers to just pin their ears back and rush. Guys like Eddie Goldman and Akeem Hicks, they have guys in there that are really good. So this is going to be a really good test for the entire Titans offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, I would much rather see Taylor Lewan and Jack Conklin tested because, I mean, you watch them on a week-in to week-out basis. I mean, against the Panthers, Lewan had, you know, 10 to 15 snaps in a row where he just looked perfect. I mean, he was beating his guy in the run game. He was crossing the face of guards. There was one play where he ended up getting in front of 99 for the Panthers and just putting him on the ground and moving up to the next level. And then on the other side, you have Conklin, who buried guys playing against the Jets, and just, I mean, he's such a stalwart, hard guy to move that if he can ever set his feet in front of a pass rusher, whether it's a defensive tackle, linebacker, outside, you know, whatever, once he gets that position in front of you, you're not going to beat him. He's too big and he locks his hands on too hard. So, you know, I would rather see them tested now and let, you know, the guys in the middle of the line have, you know, the quote unquote easy pickings if you're going to have one strength be, you know, significantly up. Because I think Chicago's outside pass rushers are good. You know, I think that's probably the strength of their team, top to bottom. You know, we can talk about Trubisky later, but, you know, right now I would say that's where they're going to win games, is if those guys win their matchups. But, you know, I've got full confidence in Lewan and Conklin, and, you know, Jonnu Smith might get a test where he, you know, stays in to block, because they had him do some of that last week where he stayed in to block edge rushers one-on-one and pass protection. So, you know, we may get to see yet another facet of Jonnu Smith's game versus ones. So, yeah, I'm excited to see the matchup.
It's not just the pass blocking. I'm really intrigued in how we're going to run block, because they have two really good run-stopping inside linebackers in Jarrell Freeman and Danny Trevathan. So I really want to see us have a good game, especially after Derrick Henry ran for 36 yards on 16 carries last game. It's not going to be easy this week by any means. I just want to see us control the game on the ground.
What if this is the game where they let Mariota really call the plays, like they said they've been talking about, and he goes hurry up and motions everybody out? He's in an empty backfield. You know,
he will tear apart this secondary. No,
it wouldn't, because it's the third game of the preseason. Like you said, he knows the starters are going to play a full half. This is your last chance at live action. You know, let him call some, you know, wait, script the first eight plays, and after that, let him go. You know, they're not making hay between the guards. You know, motion everybody out. You know, come out with DeMarco Murray, Jonnu, Delanie Walker, Taywan Taylor, and Rishard Matthews, and then just, you know, move those guys how you see fit if you're Mariota, and just get the best advantage you can. And if nothing's there, spread everybody out and run as a quarterback. You know, he mm-hmm. can, if he has control at the line of scrimmage, I think this team will go to another level. You know, even if the defense isn't any better than it was last year, I think giving Mariota control at the line with how experienced he is and how calm and poised he is, I think that would take this team, you know, to a playoff caliber team in, you know, one drive. So I would love to see that, just as a response to them having such good inside linebackers. So, you know, if your strengths are your outside linebackers and your inside linebackers, I'm going to take that away. I'm going to go mm-hmm. three-step drop, and I'm going to go quick passes, and, you know, you either going to get to me quick or you're not going to get to me at all.
Yeah, and you saw last year when we were running up-tempo stuff, Mariota was getting to the line, he was calling his own plays, and we were running quick, like in 2-minute drills and such. We were unstoppable. He was picking apart defenses with Tajay Sharp, Rishard Matthews, Delanie, and whoever else we had, Harry Douglas and whatever. And now with the weapons he has now, if we run up-tempo stuff, no one can stop us.
Finally, before we wrap up this episode, I have one more point I want to hit, and that is that in addition to DeMarco Murray, there is another Titan who will be joining the team, we think anyway, for his first time during the preseason. That is wide receiver Tajay Sharp. Everybody with any sort of association with the Titans, media fan, otherwise, over the past week has said something about the receivers, because there's so many of them, and it's going to be a position that's going to be tough to narrow down when it comes to the final cut day. Tajay Sharp, at this point, you can kind of pencil in as that number 5 wide receiver, but he hasn't even put on a helmet yet during the off-season program. How much do you think being in the preseason games will help him, and what would you like to see from him over the next couple of weeks?
I think he's kind of in a bad situation. Because he's coming straight into a competition where he's expected to play really well, and he's coming off a pretty serious foot injury. This is just has the makings of it going poorly for him. And this has been a really tumultuous offseason for him. I want to see him play well, obviously. I would never want to see someone play bad on the Titans. But this is it's a pretty big game for Sharp, and I just don't know how well he's going to play coming off a serious injury, and he's only been practicing for less than a week. So I don't know what I'm expecting of him. I'm not really expecting much, but I think people will be expecting him to make a serious impact like he made last year in the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be one of those people that kind of eats into that narrative, but you're right. I mean, I expect Tajay Sharp to win deep routes. That's where I remember him doing his best work, against Vontae Davis when they played Indy, you know, against Green Bay. He had the long touchdown. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember him being miscast as a slot guy and a guy who can go over and do the intermediate stuff, and that never really seemed to be his thing. He didn't like getting hit. He didn't like dealing with the linebackers, you know, but he doesn't mind going against corners. He does well going deep. I would like to see him play that X role that they said he's going to play, and let him, you know, go deep 2-3 times, and then if it's there, throw it. If it's not, check down. But, you know, at least get him running those routes so he can start getting re-familiar with how he won in his rookie year, so he can be more comfortable and you can build off that.
Sunday at noon, the Tennessee Titans are taking on the Chicago Bears in their third preseason game at Nissan Stadium in Nashville, Tennessee. The game will be broadcast nationally on Fox. We are back next week to recap that game. From Matthias Wadner, Will Lomas, and our today's special guest, Jim Coburn, I'm Luke Worsham. We'll talk to everybody next week. Next couple of weeks.